People are asking, when will this savage bombing end? How many more thousands of children can be killed while we stand by? How can we just live our lives while we watch the babies die? Shukran Jazilan to the Houthi army, standing for the conscience of us all. When they say no business as usual, while the bombs continue to fall. For a country that doesn't have an air force, they're painting black, red, green, and white on the helicopters that they use to board the ships to show their cause is right. The president says this terrorism must stop right away, to which the Houthis respond, yes, that's right, that's exactly what we're trying to say. Shukran Jazilan to the Houthi army, standing for the conscience of us all. When they say no business as usual, while the bombs continue to fall. Ships are going all the way around Africa to avoid the Houthi net. If Israel wants trading partners, now they might be just a little harder to get. We can blockade ports all over, north, south, east, and west. But the Houthi army are the ones who are no doubt blocking the traffic the best. Shukran Jazilan to the Houthi army, standing for the conscience of us all. When they say no business as usual, while the bombs continue to fall.
And welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, Greenpeace and Sea Shepherd Conservation Society co-founder Captain Paul Watson has inhabited a cage in Greenland since last summer. The inveterate privateer for the whales, dolphins, and all the ocean's creatures was arrested there on an international warrant issued by whaling nation Japan. It seeks Watson's extradition, and the deadline for the Danish court's decision could be as soon as next week. Charlie Humphrey runs the Paul Watson Foundation podcast, and he and the rest of the crew of Neptune's Navy are calling all hands. Welcome to the program, Charlie.
Thanks so much for having me, Lex. I appreciate it.
Well, it's my great pleasure, of course. Now, Charlie, when was the last time you spoke to Paul?
Yeah, the last time I spoke to Paul was back in November. We were able to conduct an interview with Paul while he's in prison in Greenland. And, you know, what really struck me about, hearing Paul is just how, you know, calm and how resolute he is. You know, I mean, you wouldn't get the sense from Paul that there's, you know, any panic. You know, he seems just always very much in control and, you know, just very practical about everything that's in front of him.
Well, do you share his aplomb at his situation?
You know, I think for a lot of us, it is scary. The lengths at which Japan is going to put pressure on the Danish government and other governments, including France, to get what they want, which is to extradite Paul to Japan, it's quite amazing. You wouldn't think that a superpower like Japan would go to such lengths to really go after one man, but it really speaks to Paul's success over the years since 1977 when he started Sea Shepherd and began tracking pirate whalers and other whaling nations. He's made a name for himself, and I think because of that, Japan recognizes that as long as Paul is on a ship, And as long as that ship is potentially out there, it can bring a lot of embarrassment to Japan and their whaling activities, and a lot of negative attention, which they'd like to avoid. And I think their strategy, obviously, is that if we can keep Paul in prison and, you know, preferably locked away in Japan where people can't really get to him, then I think they're hoping that they can, you know, slow down the movement that Paul created and also go about their whaling activities, you know, without any opposition. So, yeah, to answer your question, though, it is scary. You know, things have ratcheted up. You know, when this first happened, when he was arrested in July, I think, you know, initially everybody was just shocked because obviously, you know, Paul has been on this Interpol red notice before, but all indications were that that was a thing of the past and that there wasn't an active red notice and that, you know, he could travel, you know, fairly freely. I'm sure there were some countries he would be wary of, but, you know, the idea though was that, you know, all that had been put to bed and he could move on with his life. And so, you know, when he was arrested in Nook, it caught everyone by surprise. And now I guess that we're finding out more information about Japan's involvement. It definitely shows that the stakes are very high and that they're not going to stop until they get Paul.
I'm curious, though, about the media strategy. If Japan wants to keep a low profile, I don't know that this is the way to go about it, arresting such a high-profile guy. What kind of media uptake are you getting so far, Charlie, on this story?
Well, you know, that's a great point because Paul actually made that point himself. When Paul was arrested in Nook, the Jean-Paul de Joria, the ship, was on its way to try and intercept the Japanese whaling vessels. And so, you know, if Japan's quite the opposite has happened in the sense that because of the media attention, because, you know, news outlets are actually traveling to Greenland just to interview Paul in prison, he's gotten way more attention and been able to put a much brighter spotlight on Japan's actions. So it is counterintuitive that if they wanted to go about things quietly, they actually kind of backfired and blew up in their face because now people are talking about Japan. People are realizing that Japan has aspirations of whaling at a level that they haven't been in the last few years. It seems like they're ramping things up. They built a brand new factory ship, which apparently has a very wide range and can process a lot of whales. And so really by them capturing Paul, they've given Paul a platform to speak out about it. So, yeah, I mean, you made a great point is that if Japan was hoping to lay low, they've had the opposite effect by pursuing Paul.
You know, Charlie, just listening to you talk about this new factory processing ship for whales and everything that you were just saying, it seems insane to me, and it creates a kind of dissonance. Like you might as well say that we're eating rhinoceros or zebras, or it just seems really weird to me that there would even still be a whaling industry in this day and age, and that people would still be interested in putting something like this on their plates.
Yeah. You know, and the history of whaling goes back 1,000 years. Humans have been waging wars on whales for a long time, all the way back to the Basques, who, you know, discovered whales were great sources of oil and other resources. Now, for 850 of those years, people were using handheld harpoons to kill whales. And so it was kind of a limited number of whales that they would go after. Specifically, they would try to hunt whales that would float when they were killed. And so those were easier back in the days before steamships and, you know, diesel-driven ships. It was easier to get the whales back to shore to process them. And then around the 1860s, the grenade harpoons created and oil is discovered in Pennsylvania, and you have this explosion of technology. And you know, one interesting fact is that you would think that when oil was discovered in the ground, that the whales would be, you know, given a reprieve because, okay, we found oil somewhere else. We don't have to harvest whale oil anymore for lubricants and the other products that they were using that for. However, the opposite was true because once you find oil in the ground, well, now you have the technology to have ships that can chase down even bigger whales and kill other whales like the blue whale, the fin whale, that are very fast moving, very large whales. And so, you know, in that period, in the last 200 so years, you have this explosion of whaling that is merciless. You know, in the history of human existence, you know, whales have been sought after unlike many other creatures. You know, I think when you look at the population stocks of different whales over the past 100 years, basically what was happening was whalers would find a whale species and target them, and then they would literally sail around the globe to figure out where their breeding grounds were, where their migration patterns were, and just exploit them to the point where they weren't worth exploiting anymore, but then they would move on to a different species. And so, you know, I think around the 70s, the tide started to turn. Paul was certainly one of those people that helped to found Greenpeace. And there was this whole Save the Whales movement where people started to recognize that, you know, these are, you know, blue whale is the largest creature to ever live on Earth. And here we are hunting it to extinction. And so I think, you know, people started to understand whales. The advent of underwater photography and videography allowed people to see whales underwater, to see how graceful they were. Certainly, Roger Payne made it very popular when he recorded the humpback songs and made a record about that, and a lot of people bought that. It allowed people to see whales in a different way because, you know, back in the 1860s, when you're talking about Nantucket and sperm whaling, you know, Moby Dick and everything, whales sort of had this, you know, different sort of view, I guess, in the media. But like I said, in modern times, people got to see how social whales were, how intelligent they are. And the idea that humans would eradicate them from the oceans is preposterous. I mean, it's insanity. You know, I'm as astounded as you are that nations like Iceland, Japan, Norway would still want to kill whales. There's no need for that. We could be on the cusp of actually speaking to whales. I mean, there's Project SETI group that is using artificial intelligence to try to decode the communications amongst sperm whales. And sperm whales are some of the most intelligent creatures on Earth. Their brains are much larger than ours. They hold secrets and knowledge that we can't comprehend right now. But maybe one day we can catch up to them. You know, so there's so many reasons why we need whales on the planet. And you know, we talk about climate change, we talk about the need for phytoplankton in the oceans. You know, whales are a primary pump for allowing phytoplankton to bloom in necessary areas, because where whales go to the bathroom, that kind of enriches the ocean around it, which allows phytoplankton to grow. And then that helps produce oxygen that helps our atmosphere. So there's such a key part of the ecosystem that, if for no other reason at all than to say we need whales for our future and for future generations, they hold more value. You know, that is, I guess, worth more than whatever the Japanese are selling whale meat for down at the squeegee market.
Who can imagine a planet that is richer without whales? It's inconceivable. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Charlie Humphrey. Charlie runs the Captain Paul Watson Foundation podcast. And he and the rest of the people over at the Captain Paul Watson Foundation are frantically trying to get people to pay attention, to get involved, to sign up, to petition the Danish government to stop the extradition of Captain Paul Watson from the current cell he's inhabiting in Greenland to Japan, where they would like to put him on trial. Charlie, Japan's legal system is notorious for its conviction rate without trial. Kangaroos are also on the menu in some areas of the world, but they come to mind when thinking of the legal system in Japan. Can we talk about what are the charges that Paul is facing right now, firstly?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a few charges that Japan has brought forth against Paul, and all this stems back to an incident in February of 2010 when Paul and his crew were down in the Southern Ocean, you know, off of Antarctica, and you know, they were trying to you know, stop the Japanese whalers from killing whales. And basically, you know, in a nutshell, there was another captain down in the Southern Ocean. His name was Peter Bethune. He was the captain of the Addie Gill, which is a small vessel, kind of looks like the Batmobile, if you will, as a boat. Mm-hmm. And so the Japanese, they had their own ship called the Shonan Maru II, and the Shonan Maru II rammed the Addie Gill, which is a very small vessel, sliced it in half. When that happened, Peter Bethune then, you know, was trying to think of, you know, what am I going to do next? And so he came up with the idea to board the Japanese vessel and to, you know, give a letter to the captain of the Japanese vessel saying, hey, you sunk my ship. You owe me for the ship that you sank, basically. And so in the process of all that, the Sea Shepherd vessel had a couple of inflatable vessels, smaller vessels that were running alongside the Shonan Maru II. And the Japanese are claiming that one of these inflatable vessels threw a bottle of butyric acid onto the deck of the Japanese ship. And what they're saying is that when that butyric acid, you know, exploded, I guess, that it caused harm to some of the sailors that were on the deck of the Japanese vessel. Now, at the trial, one of the trials that Paul was at here in Greenland, the judge allowed the Japanese to show their footage. And, you know, I guess the footage shows somebody throwing one of these bottles, a stink bomb, basically is all it is, onto the deck. And they're saying, oh, well, because of this stink bomb, one of our guys, I think, got like a blister on his cheek. Something to that effect. Now, Paul had, you know, this was a TV show, right? So there is tons of video footage showing different angles of that same event. And Paul has that footage showing that where the stink bomb landed, there was nobody on the deck at the time. So it couldn't have injured anyone. So that's sort of charge number one, is that basically the idea being that Paul ordered someone to throw this onto the deck, because Paul didn't throw it himself, right? Someone else threw it. But they're saying Paul ordered somebody to throw it on the deck, and that then caused bodily harm, which isn't true. To further that explanation, the Japanese themselves had two gentlemen on the side of the deck that were outfitted with backpacks with, like, you know, look like little guns that could spray pepper spray. And I think their idea was, well, we're going to spray pepper spray onto these inflatable boats that are below our ship. Well, when they activated it and they sprayed the pepper spray, wind came back towards them and it blew the pepper spray into their face. So you can see on video these guys spraying pepper spray and then immediately like rubbing their eyes because they sprayed themselves with pepper spray. So the most likely thing is that they pepper sprayed themselves and got a blister on their cheek, and that's where the bodily harm comes from. Now, interestingly enough, Japan, I guess the, you know, whaling company, chose to completely get rid of the clothing that those crew members were wearing. Because one of Paul's points is, hey, if you think it's butyric acid from us, then just analyze the clothing. And if you find butyric acid on the clothing, then yeah, okay, our stink bomb somehow splashed on them. But if it's pepper spray, then you guys just pepper sprayed yourself. But we'll never know because Japan saw fit to completely destroy all the clothing. So, you know, I guess they can't prove it one way or another in court.
Well, this was years and years ago that these events took place too, right?
Absolutely. We're talking 14 years ago. Yeah. The other charge is intrusion onto boats. So like I said, Peter Bethune, I think he cut some netting and climbed up onto the Japanese vessel. And so, you know, he, you know, was a trespasser on their boat. So that was one of the charges. And then there's these conspiracy charges. And one of which, I believe, is they're saying that he inspired to impede commerce. Now, the whole loophole under which Japan practices whaling is this scientific research loophole.
That's interesting. Now, that's it. And that was something they put forward themselves, the Japanese legal team?
Yeah, well. So what's interesting is you go back to 1983, the Whaling Commission puts a moratorium on whaling, but they wrote in a small little section that said, hey, but if you're a scientist, if you're a scientist in a country and you need to kill some whales for science, that's okay. For research, right? And the Japanese took that loophole and just ran with it and said, well, basically, we can kill as many whales as we want as long as we say it's for research purposes. And so they've been operating under that guise for so many years. Now, the charge against Paul says that, well, you impeded commerce. Well, what is it? Is it scientific research or is this a business where you're trying to sell whale meat? And, you know, so that obviously is hard for them to explain.
Well, unless they're trying to sell research itself. I mean, if they say yeah, well, our science is actually, it's a commercial.
That could be.
But what about the statute of limitations doesn't apply here then, I guess.
Well, and that's something that I have spoken to a few lawyers who have sort of insinuated that potentially the Danish government could say, hey, this happened 14 years ago and, you know, it's...
Let it go.
It's passed. Yeah, let it go. Now, the other thing that the Danish folks have said is that if, and Paul didn't do any of this stuff, but if for all intents and purposes, they said that he did, if he did it under Danish law, it's a $600 fine and you move on with your life. And for extradition purposes, the charges have to be serious. The charges have to be of a gravity that warrants extradition. Mm-hmm. From my understanding is Denmark and Japan don't currently have an extradition treaty. And the other issue with extradition is that if it's politically motivated and if it can be proven to have been politically motivated, then you can't extradite someone if it's a politically motivated charge. And that's where Paul stands on all this is that, look, his you know, viewpoint is that he embarrassed the Japanese, the whale war show put on display them killing whales in a whale.
This was a reality program that ran for a few years, right. Whale Wars, in case people don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, I think the Japanese were embarrassed by it and they kind of had to pull back operations because of the things that Paul and his crew were doing. And it seems like there's a few people in Japan that have not forgotten and that want Paul arrested and they want him sent to Japan. And again, everything that they're saying comes back to the idea that Paul ordered all of these things to happen. Paul did not order Peter Bethune to get on the Shonemaru and confront the Japanese captain. He didn't ask him to do that. And Peter Bethune has, let me back up a step. So when Peter Bethune gets on the ship, the Japanese say, okay, well, now you're on our ship. We're going to take you back to Japan. And so Peter ended up in Japan in front of that same legal system that you just talked about. And basically, for months on end, they just kept interrogating him until he would confess to something. And I think Peter realized, if I don't admit to something, they're never going to let me go. And so Peter kind of went along with the idea, yeah, Paul told me to do this. And once he did that, they said, okay, great. And they let him go. They got him out of Japanese prison. And Peter has said himself how horrific his experience in the Japanese prison was. I mean, it sounds like it took him a long time to process that and get over that experience.
So he copped a plea. And in Japan, I can't remember the exact numbers, but it's something like 95 or 8% conviction rate on plea deals, just like what he did. people, and it used to be in law. I don't know if that even applies anymore these days, but confessions under duress were not applicable in court. They were generally looked down upon. They were seen as bad things to do, but we're in a new reality. We're fast running out of time, Charlie. Now, I want two things I want to know. Paul's been in Greenland in Ster since July. What kind of conditions is he in? Did he talk about that? What are his jail conditions like right now?
Yeah, you know, the prison that Paul is in is it's a state of the art newer prison. It's actually quite fascinating on Netflix. I can't remember the show, but on Netflix there is like a documentary about this prison. It's one of the episodes. And you know, the conditions aren't that bad, to be honest. He is able to, now he's left-handed. He doesn't have a laptop or a typewriter or anything like that, but he's able to write, you know, with pen and paper. And he has a cell all to himself. His cell, actually has a TV in it, believe it or not, and a shower. There's a view. He looks out over the fjord, and he said in the summer, he was able to actually see whales out there in the water. But it is one of the most remote prisons on earth. So it's very hard for people to go to visit him. It's very hard, to get communication in and out in that regard. But, you know, he has said that, you know, the people at the prison have treated him well. One thing I did want to mention about the Peter Bethune thing is that once he got out of prison in Japan, he retracted his statement and said, yeah, Paul never, asked or ordered me to do anything. I did everything on my own volition. So I just wanted to make that point. But yeah, it's wild. They actually let the prisoners in this prison go hunting. Like, they give them a rifle and say, yeah, go hunt muskox or something. I mean, it's a totally different thing out there. But, you know, I think Paul is, Paul's Paul. I mean, he's just always very calm, very steady. You know, he wants to see this through, and he's not going to back down.
Well, okay, and finally, Charlie, how do people get involved? How can they help with the petitions, with the costs, et cetera?
Yeah, absolutely. The biggest thing right now is that we just need more awareness, because I think, you know, Denmark, there's a Danish minister of justice. His name is Peter Hummelgaard. He holds Paul's fate in his hands, and he's going to make a decision here before December 18th, which is right around the corner, less than a week. If everybody listening could just do what you can to try to spread awareness about Paul's plight, if you have local news agencies that you know or government officials, talk about Paul, let them know what's going on. You can also email the Danish Prime Minister of Justice. His email is jm@jm.dk. Pretty easy email. His name is Peter Hummelgaard. And what I would say is just to email him and let him know that, you know, Paul's an environmental hero, and these charges brought forth by Japan are bogus, and Denmark shouldn't be seen as a country that's going to jail environmental activists like Paul, and that they should come out on the right side of history and support people that are trying to protect the environment and trying to protect whales.
So again, that Minister of Justice's email is jm@jm.dk for Denmark, because they are administrating Greenland. He's got a phone number there too, but people can find all this information at paulwatsonfoundation.org and much more besides as well, right?
Absolutely. You can find Paul's address if you want to write Paul a letter in prison. You can find more about the petition that we have. There's lots of information on there. So, yeah, if you go to the website, you can find out about campaigns and everything that we're doing and what you can do to help get Paul out of prison.
Well, Charlie Humphrey, thanks a lot for coming on and telling us about it today. PaulWatsonFoundation.org to find out more. And we always hate seeing people in prison for unjust reasons, and also hate seeing whales being killed in this day and age. It's absolutely nuts. Thanks a lot also to David Rovics for coming on, davidrovics.com. Thanks again, Charlie, and good luck, eh?
Oh, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
For a country that doesn't have an air force, they're painting black, red, green, board the ships to show their cause is right. The president says this terrorism must stop right away.